Welcome to Bi Plus Podcasting for the Bi Plus Universe. I'm Elizabeth Meacham. Today, we welcome Ruth Anna Evans to discuss her collection, No One Can Help You, Tales of Lost Children and Other Nightmares, just in time for Halloween gift giving. Ruth, could you let us know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi. First of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be on. I am a bi writer of short horror. I have been writing since about 2020. I grew up writing, but I had never had much skill at fiction. And then just it sort of started popping out a new creative thing. And so I published my first book in 2021. And since then, I've just been cranking out the horror. So I have two novellas out and the collection No One Can Help You, and then a handful of stories as well.
Okay, when did the one we're talking about, No One Can Help You? I love this title, by the way. No One Can Help You.
No one can help you. It's true sometimes.
No. Don't you feel that way?
It was published in May of 2022.
So how did you become interested in writing horror? Where does that come from?
So my first story that I wrote, which is published under a different name, was just sort of a young adult fantasy with a little bit of darker elements. And one of my beta readers said to me, she said, you know, this is sort of a psychological horror. And that just sparked me, well, maybe I want to try horror. And then the ideas just started coming because I tapped into my own fears, mm-hmm. which is what No One Can Help You is all about, is just fears and all of the things that I worry about that keep me up at night, that, you know, someone crashing into me out of the blue, or, you know, my child choking to death, or, you know, all of these things that can happen and do happen. And then just in horror, I just take those things and just crank them up to 10 and add more and just scare the pants off myself and anyone reading. So
do you find that's helpful for your anxiety?
It definitely is. It's most helpful in like processing world events, mm-hmm. Because this all kind of started in the pandemic, where everything was just so overwhelming all the time and the political situation was so fraught and you never knew what was going to happen. And there was just like this aura of panic. And so that was what I did with my panic, was just write horror and read some horror too. I feel like reading horror can help you with, like, for a little while, making it feel like it's not real.
I wish Mick were here. He wasn't able to be with us today. Mick works in the evenings.
Yes.
But he has his book, Verum Malum. I think that's the name of it. But I read that. And that's exactly, it was like perfect timing for me, because it's like, you know, it's escapism at its best, you know.
Right, because it's the
bad things can happen.
It's the hard side of it.
Yeah, but it's not likely that will happen. So it helps you just turn your brain off, you know, mm-hmm. in a good way.
Yeah, and so I feel like fear is just like this open, unending well of ideas, because there's just so many bad things that can happen.
Yeah. That could go either way. That could either amp up your anxieties, but it's also giving you an outlet for your anxieties.
Right. So it does. It definitely does. And I mean, anytime something happens, like for example, one of my stories in my book, No One Can Help You, is trigger warning. Mm-hmm. And that is about a mass shooting at a preschool. I know, right? So trigger warning for anybody who has trouble reading that kind of stuff, if it upsets you, that the book is full of very hard things.
Yes, I do like that you lay it out though in the front specifically what's in what thing. Mm-hmm. So everybody's, you know, it's fair warning. It is horror, so something's going to upset you probably anyway, but you do a very good job of laying that out. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. It's, you know, it's back and forth a lot in the horror community about whether people should do trigger warnings. or whether they're unnecessary. And, you know, if you're reading horror, you should expect to be triggered. But yeah. I really feel like it's important to respect the fact that just because someone has a trigger doesn't mean that they shouldn't be allowed to read horror.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. But it's there. So for me, I don't insist on trigger warnings. If somebody's, back in the day of Tumblr, people would get all over each other because, oh, so-and-so didn't give a trigger warning. Well, for me as a person, if I find it helpful, but I don't find it mandatory. So it should be up to the author. And maybe you feel like it this book, maybe you won't the next book, who knows? But it feels like it's a personal choice.
And I think it depends a little bit on the content because, you know, not everything, you could have a trigger warning for absolutely everything.
Yeah. And people do. Some people do. Yeah.
People have all kinds of triggers. So I think there's certain things that I would always appreciate to know about. Yeah. But that's me, you know, you're not writing for every person. If you tried to write for every person, you would never get anything on the page.
I think when it really, really bothers me is when, and then I'll probably complain about it to somebody. I remember when The Walking Dead came out, they had the comics, right? Which is great. It wasn't so much that there was a rape scene. It was how they were treating the female characters in general. And so there were prose books that came out while the comics were still out. And I got tired of reading about the women were, they'd start out really strong, but they'd all experience a sexual assault or a beating. Like, okay, yeah, we already know we're vulnerable in the apocalypse. We don't need that, this shoved down our throats. And
And then it's a tired trope.
Yeah, it is. It's like, okay, great. You know, like we're not going to be armed to the teeth already. I mean, geez, we're probably going to stockpile mace anyway. But, you know, I try not to scare my kids when they were growing up about this could happen, that could happen. It's like, I don't need that in my escapism, you know? And every time I turn around, every woman is okay, I've had enough. And I did complain about that in a review I left, but I noticed after that, they stopped doing it so much. So I hope maybe myself and other women were loud enough that we made a difference. I don't know, but that's probably, I don't know.
Yeah, I also get tired of rape in media.
Yeah, but I don't know. So I think it's when it becomes a trope and it becomes tiresome in somebody's writing, I'm done. But when it's just like part of the story and it helps move the story somewhere, and and it's necessary to the story, people go through things and it's that's okay with me. I still appreciate the trigger warning though. So I just appreciate it when it's there. If it's not, okay. But anyway.
Yeah, I think in a collection, it's also helpful because, you know, then you can sort of pick and choose which story you want to read. So that's nice. That's nice. The only issue is I never want to spoil a story. Right. So there's different ways that people have done it, you know, like trigger warnings on such and such page if you're interested, and then they can just skip that page if they're not interested. So. You know, you have to be a little brave sometimes when you're writing a story about whether you're going to put certain things in there. Like I wrote a story called Hungry, which is about a sort of near future dystopia where they run out of food and they run out of dog food and it's written and pet food and it's written from the perspective of an animal shelter owner. And there's some animal suffering in that story. Yeah. And, you know, many, many, many people, that is their line, is animal suffering and animal cruelty. And so you don't want, like, obviously, if that's your issue, don't read the story. And I would never judge someone for that.
Right.
But at the same time, some people judge authors for writing that type of thing and think, well, maybe animal cruelty doesn't bother me. And that's
like, no, that's exactly why I'm writing about it. Yeah.
That's what I'm writing about, because I think this is horror.
Yeah. So yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah. If I was okay with it, it would be my sunshiny fairy tale book.
No. Right.
explorer. Yeah.
I think so too. So I try to give people the benefit of the doubt on some of these topics that I, you know, that I don't like to read, because generally they're not writing it as though this is something that's good.
Right.
You know, you don't want it to end up, like you said, being a trope, but it can be done okay
in a good way.
I agree with you. As far as like writing horror and why I write horror, you know, I started off with all these ideas and wrote them and that kind of thing. But the thing that keeps me writing horror is really the horror community readers. I've made so many connections with really cool people. And, you know, some of them I talk to nearly every day. And whenever, you know, I put out a new story, people are reading it for me, giving me feedback and sharing about it. And, you know, I'm not like a big time writer. I'm not selling hundreds of copies or anything, but there's that audience out there that really cares about indie horror writers. And the writers are really supportive for each other.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the kindest communities that I've come across. And I didn't know what to expect. Mostly where I interact is on Twitter and then a little bit on Facebook. But when I went in to the horror community, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if it was going to be, you know, like a bunch of, you know, like hardcore conservative people that, I don't want to generalize about any group of people, but I didn't know if I would fit in.
Yeah.
I guess I'll put it that way. I didn't know if I would fit in. And it's just like this super queer space and, you know, just as liberal as they come.
Yeah.
And I just really have enjoyed like the social aspect of being a horror writer. So that's kept me going when it's been difficult, and people post how their word counts and, you know, what they're working
on. Cool.
And, you know, when they get an acceptance to an art for a story into a publication, they post about that, and it's, you know, congratulations, and everybody's happy for each other and that kind of thing.
Cool.
So it's just a really great community.
That is cool. Do you guys ever have meetups or anything? Mika said he's gone to conventions and things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of conventions. I haven't had the chance to go to any of them yet, but there are a lot of conventions, and there's, you know, a group of people that have gotten to know each other pretty well, and, you know, they stream from the conventions sometimes, and then there's the podcasts, and people know each other through the podcasts, and it's really connected. It's a very connected community.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's always nice when you like doing something to have that community support doing it, and you don't burn out.
Yeah, because, you know, back in the day, I used to write poetry, and it was terrible, but I wrote it, and I cared a lot about it, but there was nobody reading it, and you couldn't get any feedback, and there just wasn't a community around it, and I just felt like I stopped writing because there was nothing, there's no audience. And so having that audience and having those readers, and, you know, like I've got a group of beta readers that every time I write something, you know, they want to read it and they want to give me feedback on it. And that just, it's so meaningful. It's brought so much meaning into my life.
Do you find that certain types of writing, like, because you mentioned poetry now, you have an easier time? Like, what do you write when you free write? Like, just when you're trying to get your brain motivated to write and you just want to type something and get it on the paper and you're not necessarily writing a book, you're just as an exercise. Do you find it ends up being horror? Do you find it ends up being poetry? Is there any specific genre
help? My just writing tends to be journaly.
Okay.
I'm a big journaler. I have stacks of journals and that kind of thing. And if I'm ever struggling to get the juices flowing for writing, I'll probably sit down and journal.
Okay.
And then if I'm not in like a space where I feel like I'm going to write like beautiful words, I'll probably outline and just kind of like tell a brief bare bones type of story so that I can go back and make it writerly at a later point. So those are really the types of things I do when I'm just writing.
Yeah. My friend and I got into writing when we were in college, just crappy erotica. And it's not anything that we keep, just to get the juices.
I love crappy erotica.
Juices flowing. And I still, every now and again, when I just feel like I want to write, and I really don't publish anything or anything like that, but and I'm kind of in this quirky writing mood, that's what comes out, or something funny, or funny poetry.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a good genre. Crappy erotica is an crappy awesome erotica. Genre.
And then I don't keep it even. It's like, seriously, it's just what comes out.
No.
It's
publishable.
Probably. I've read a lot worse than what I write, so. Except in this case, your writing is really good. It's so straightforward. I really like it. It moves along well. It's easy to get into. And I didn't get all of the book read, but a couple of stories I did. But you are good at painting a picture without being overly verbose about it, you know?
Yeah, I have a hard time with writing a lot of words
about
something that is only a few words in my head. So my stories don't have a lot of padding.
That's right. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, they're not overly fluffy or padded. And it's just, you're into it and you're into the story. You know, I'm not left going, where's this going? Okay. You know, it's intense, and it's not something I could digest in one afternoon. Like some books I can get into and they're really good and I can digest them in one afternoon, but they're usually not horror books. So I'm there, like the way you portray these events that are happening, it's just very visual to me, and I can see the things in front of me. Very cool writing.
I appreciate that. Wow. I know one of the pieces of feedback that I get pretty often on the book is that people have to take breaks. That they have to put it down and walk away for a while.
Because
it gets to be a little much. But, that's life, right?
Yeah, that's horror. I don't think I could, unless it's a Freddy Krueger movie, those things made me laugh. Oh my gosh, I've never laughed harder in my life. I don't know why Nightmare on Elm Street was so hilarious to me. Because I just sat there and laughed. Most like Halloween scares the crap out of me. And mostly because I saw it when it first aired on, television, edited for television, when my parents are out one night and I'm like with my siblings and it's 1980 or something like that. Or, a couple of years after the movie came out. And that scared the crap out of me. So now every time I watch it, it scares the crap out of me. So I can't.
Yeah, I'm easy to scare. I'm easy to scare with movies. And my husband is a horror movie aficionado. He is all over all of it. And it has to be like just really good for me to sit down and watch it with him, because I mean, some of these movies are so gory.
I think it's
brutal.
Yeah.
And I can write it, but I can't read it, and I have a hard time watching it.
But that one was particularly scary. I think it's the music. I don't know. But yours are, they weren't as gory as they were more horror. They weren't horror.
It's more of a psychological, emotional horror. I think that's what it's described out as, emotional horror, because there's a little gore. Hungry has some gore in it. That's available through godless.com. So if you like gore, there's a little bit of it, but mostly it's just like, okay, what is the absolute worst case scenario, and let me break your heart with that.
I did notice it was more emotional, like tugging at my heartstrings, oh God, not somebody's losing their child and they blame themselves. And that's totally what every parent, that's our horror right there.
The book is a lot about parenthood. After I had my daughter, I didn't have postpartum depression, but I had postpartum anxiety where I just felt like anything terrible could happen.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Especially when you get pregnant, this is like a hormonal thing that happens. It's like hyper vigilant, and I hated it because I was afraid of everything.
Right. I mean, I constantly felt like an airplane was going to crash out of the sky into my house, or, you know, driving was just horrible because I felt like, you know, we were going to get crashed into every second
the whole time I was driving. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That core fear never goes away that, you know, you're going to get a call from the school and I'm sorry, a tree fell on your child.
Yeah.
And they're dead.
Yeah.
And I just live with that. I don't know if most people do.
We do. No, this is not so many, you know, I think it's been more described by other people, by a friend, you know, it's like when you have a child, that's your heart walking around the world. And then when they're not in sight, it's especially, I mean, yours is what, 13?
She's 13.
It hasn't gone away. It's not going to. And then now mine are moving out and I'm like, what, you know, I've got a child that's an hour away at school and back at their first apartment, they've decided they've moved out and I'm, what's going on? What are they doing now? You know, should I call? Yeah. I want to call, but I don't want to call all the time because that's,
but I want to call all the time.
I want to know that. It's hard because you miss them, but you're worried. And my dad said, you know, he's 87. He goes, and we were talking about that. He goes, yep, still. And he's 87 years old. Can't remember a lot, but he still feels that. And so there's a lot of worry and just never goes away. Oh man, figured it'd go away by the time they had their own kids. No. He says, because then you're worried about their kids.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
Well, the driving is going to start in a couple of years for us. So that's going to be the biggest, hardest thing, I think. I've been in a couple of out of the blue accidents in my life. And just like the fact that that could happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is why this is such a right horror for you, because it does. It channel that somewhere. Because
Right. I have to.
Yeah.
I was actually a newspaper reporter for several years of my life. And that inspires quite a bit of horror as well. I pulled a few stories from there and there's a few more percolating because it's rough out there.
It is.
It is a rough world.
Who is it?
Peter, I feel like I'm giving you anxiety right now.
No, this is so cool because it feels good to talk about this. You're not the first responder. You're almost the second responder because somebody's got to record all this. Right. So
you have to be present.
Yeah.
You can take breaks. Like we can turn off the hurricane coverage or the school shooting coverage and go do something else. But as a reporter, you can't turn that off.
That's right. Cause it's your job. Yeah. Right. Oh, wow. It's good to talk about.
That's why I got out of it.
Yeah. But you're channeling it somewhere, which is good too, because then you're not always carrying it.
Yeah, it was a good life experience. It was definitely a good life experience that I've carried with me.
Yeah, yeah. And emotions need outlets, so the horror is a great outlet.
It is a good outlet.
I like this. Yeah. Okay, so tell us more about the collection. We've talked about a couple of stories. What's the overall idea with this collection and No One Can Help You collection specifically?
Yeah, it really is kind of the idea of, I call it real life horror with a supernatural twist, because most of the stories do have some sort of supernatural element that kind of crank that horror up even further. So Nicholas Is Gone is the one you read, or one of the ones you read. So that story is about a woman, she has a young child and she's an alcoholic and she, her alcoholism gets out of control and she doesn't have a job and she, you know, it has a hangover and misses the first day of work for a new job. And that new job was supposed to pay their rent. And she's already had several chances. So she gets evicted. And she and her son are homeless. And end up in a shelter, and then she can't help herself and she buys some alcohol and drinks at the shelter and gets caught and they get kicked out of the shelter. Then they're living in their car and it's just like, this is what would happen. This is what would happen. This is what would happen and just kind of following the natural sequence of events when everything goes wrong. But so she's at the gas station and she's out of money and she can't fill up her car and it's winter. And she's out of options, and then somebody comes and helps her.
Yes.
But that's when the supernatural element starts playing in there, and it gets better for a little bit, but then it gets so much worse.
Yes. So, yeah. What I noticed with that story, she is sucking the life out of her own kid.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, she is ruining his childhood.
Yes. And it takes seeing somebody else doing that to wake her up.
Right. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Well, it's like, what's your rock bottom? Well, her rock bottom was, you know, watching her kid. Somebody else hurt her kid, even though she was kind of, you know, doing the same thing in a sense. Mm-hmm. So,
And the man even said to her, you know, this is better. He won't have to live through the hell you're putting him through. And, you know, it appalled her for her love for her child to be questioned.
Yeah.
But, you know, apparently the alcohol had been stronger for her. Her alcoholism had overcome her love for her child. And that's just like a brutal reality of what was happening to this woman. So, I don't want to give away
So, but you don't blame her for the alcoholism either. You don't make her a victim, but you don't make her, you know, clearly something happened that she's an alcoholic. And
she has a disease. Really
struggling
she has
a disease. And it's exactly. Mm-hmm. That was it. So it's interesting. But
this is one of my favorite endings that I've written. I don't want to say anything about the end, but that is one of my favorite endings that I've written. One of my favorite in the book. So
That one was a sneak up on you horror, because, you know, the first half of the story, you're like, oh, this is really sad, but where's the horror? And then you turn the page. Oh, there it is. there it is.
It's right through the door.
The next, the next story is like right off, but this one's like, well, there it is.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Some of them are right in your face at the beginning. So, and I will talk about Phantom Pain, since that is my story that features a bi character, and that is also based on one of my biggest fears, which is breast cancer. Mm-hmm. My mother had breast cancer twice, and her grandmother died of breast cancer, and there's just a lot of breast cancer in my family. So it could happen at any time. I'm just about 40, and I've been having mammograms for a while, and, you know, any one of those mammograms, something could pop up. So that was like the root of that story, was, you know, breast cancer. But my character, she is a bi character who has never been really comfortable with being out. She grew up in a small southern town, and just didn't have the community to support her, but now she does. She has a friend, and he drags her out to meet some people and fixes her up with a girl. And like, she's really excited because this is her first opportunity to have like a relationship with a female, which she had craved. And then she develops a sore on her breast. And then it gets really, really bad. So it's sort of like there's a lot of internal discomfort in this story, where she is not comfortable with herself, and she's got some internalized fat phobia as well, which is a thread in the book. She deals with the medical establishment, and they're not kind, and basically just brush off her concerns and tell her to lose weight. And so the way the story plays out has a lot to do with her not being comfortable with herself. So that's one that I feel like it's one of my most disgusting stories. Mm-hmm. So heads up on that. If you have a weak stomach, don't read Phantom Pain. But if you like that kind of thing, and you're looking for a character with some depth, I think that that would be a good story for people.
Yeah,
to
these
try.
Sound very personal for you. Like these stories are really coming from a personal place.
Yeah, they're definitely about that book in particular is full of personal.
And I think to me, that's another thing about trigger warnings. It's like, well, if I weren't to write, I think some people really just don't want to hear about stuff at all. Like, well, don't read horror. But when you're writing from a personal angle like that or from personal experience, you're telling your story. And I don't think it's fair to ask people not to tell their story because somebody else might be uncomfortable with it.
And there's a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of discourse in terms of who can write what character. Like whether you can write outside of your own experience. And, you know, as a fiction writer, I believe that you have a fair right to take a shot at any identity. But there are identities that I, like, even if I would try writing them, I'm not to a point where I would publish them yet. Because I don't know that identity well enough. But I feel kind of privileged to be bi in that that gives me insight to a whole other world of identities that can be a part of me. And you want all of your characters to have some part of you in there. So it does give me a lot of insight into, you know, love is love. And I don't know that I would have as intimate an understanding that all of my characters, their love is just love. This isn't gay love. This isn't queer love. This is just love. I feel like being bi has given me, what's the word I'm looking for? Privilege as a writer.
Yeah. You mean license? Is that the word you're looking for?
More like access.
Access perhaps. Is a good word. I think that's a good word.
Yeah, I think access to something that I wouldn't feel as comfortable writing if I were, because I've never been like fully out in my own life. So as a writer, I am, but there's definitely areas in my life where I'm not like, I don't feel like it's necessarily their right to know.
Yeah. I think that's true of everybody, every queer person anyway, you know?
Yeah. It's not their right to know. And I don't feel like they would handle that in a way that they would earn to know me that well. So
I don't think it's, you know, I think we both kind of came up this age of, well, you have to be out, you know, out and proud. Mm-hmm. And it's not always safe. And I do think that's a personal decision for somebody. And you have to feel safe. There's not only your safety considered, the safety of your family, too, or your partner or spouse. So, and you know, if you've had a lot of other trauma in your life, it may just not be a priority at that time. It's not really fair to insist that everybody all the time be out.
But it is still, you know, a fundamental part of who I am. So, and more as I grow older, I feel like, you know, I'm in a, you know, a forever marriage with a man. So it's not as though I'm becoming more bi, but I feel like I'm becoming more comfortable with that. You know, I can have conversations with people about it, and I'm not self-conscious about it in any way. Especially with the, and I feel like being part of the horror community has really given me a more comfort level, higher comfort level.
Having people, you know, having a support community is so important. But I really look forward to reading that. You know, it seems everybody I know in their 40s comes up with some medical issue, like, especially as women, because we're getting to be closer to menopause. And at 40, just be prepared. But it sounds like you're already prepared because you know what's...
Well, I do have several chronic health problems, some serious chronic health problems that I've been dealing with since I had my daughter. I had an autoimmune I guess I've heard the term autoimmune cascade.
Yeah, I got Hashimoto's, and then that triggered all sorts of issues, and then ulcerative colitis popped up. It has changed my life in a lot of ways. It's added a lot of fear, for one thing, because you never know like when you might get sick and how long you might get sick and how sick you might get.
Yep.
And so I am prepared for.
Yes.
It's been a familiar place for me for several years now.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering what this character is going to go through that I'm going to go, yep, that's it. But the nobody believing you getting, you know, the medical community is not person specific. So finding the right doctor.
Right.
Ask, and then COVID hits and they retire. Then you got to go through the whole process again. But, you know, it's like, so I'm curious what this person's going to go to. And now knowing that you have these autoimmune disorders and I think this is going to be good. Okay. I'm going to skip ahead to that one. I will. I'm going to skip ahead.
I would. That's a treat. It is a treat. You won't forget that one. I'm trying to think if there's any other stories that there's some little, if you like little short shorts, there's some flash fiction in there. The last story in the book is called Anxiety, and it's only about 1,000 words, and it's about a little girl and her mom, a little girl who suffers from anxiety. She takes medicine for it, and she's got anxiety. Her father had died, and she just struggled, but her mom needed to run to the store to get some milk, and she doesn't come back. She doesn't leave her, but it's like by minute of the girl like watching the clock, and then you're following. I'm not going to tell you what happens to the mom at all, but you're following her story too, and it's like these two stories, and both of them are just like anxiety because they need to be together. The child needs her mom, the mom needs to be with her kid, and they're separated, and you don't know if she's going to get back. So that story is, like I said, only about 1,000 words, but if you need a shot of just like,
you need to freak yourself out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you have this experience when I was like teenager, I was like babysitting my siblings. My parents didn't come home till like 4 o'clock in the morning. They never stayed out past midnight ever.
That's scary.
And they just had a good time. They were fine. They just were just having a great time at some
point. And they didn't call?
No. I'm like dying. Oh my God. What if they're in a wreck? I mean, but that watching the clock and what was going through my little head at the time, and kids I had a great imagination.
Yes.
As a kid, as a teenager, and you know, just what goes through your head. I could totally see you're getting a lot of mileage out of being a parent, but also being a kid with anxiety at some point too, I can tell.
Yeah. It did have another title. The subtitle was, I think it was Tales for Stories and Stories for Parents and Other Brave People. That's awesome. But I wanted to make sure that people who weren't parents
could, well, because I think you can enjoy it if you're not a parent, because I think kids have those same fears, that separation anxiety goes both ways. So and so everybody's been a kid. That's the thing about horror. If it's good horror, you can see it from different angles, and and anybody can enjoy it, unless you really just don't like horror. Okay.
Right.
It's fair too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which is fair. There's definitely 3 or 4 stories that don't have kids in it out of the 10. So that's how many stories are in the book. It's got 10 stories, and some of them are about 1,000 words, and then some of them are like 12,000 words. So there's a couple of full novelettes in there. So if you're looking for a nice long read, then that's there. But if you just need something to sit down and read right before bed to give you a nightmare, then that's there too.
I'm kind of curious now, what other Ruthisms are there going to be in there? Because a lot of this is your personal identity invested as a parent, as a bisexual woman. What other good juicy nuggets are in there?
Hang on, I'm drawing a blank.
Maybe, I don't know.
So trigger warning is, I think, the darkest one in the book. And actually, I did want to mention trigger warning because I'm doing a fundraiser with trigger warning right now. Okay. I went ahead and published it separately. It's available on Amazon, and I'm donating all of the money that I'm raising to Everytown for gun safety.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's, like I said, it's a story that starts at in the aftermath of a mass shooting at a preschool. And then, gosh, I don't want to spoil it. It has a supernatural element, and it's a revenge story.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's not just revenge on the shooter, because the shooter was killed. Mm-hmm. But it's a revenge on everybody who was responsible in any way for this guy being out of jail and for him having access to weapons and all of the people that we know should take more responsibility than they do. When something like this happens. But the crazy thing about this story is I wrote it, and then the weekend that I was supposed to release the book, 3 days before that, Uvalde happened. So it was just like, it's got a lot of similarities mm-hmm. in the story that I wrote and what happened. And so I actually couldn't release the book that weekend.
Yeah.
Because the cover of the book is a child's coffin floating in a sea of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's always the chance that somebody thinks that you're trying to profit off
off the loss of their child. Yeah.
Right, and I would never want anybody to think that. I mean, the story is just like a raging indictment of U.S.
Yeah.
gun laws.
Yeah.
Not protecting our kids or our people. So that's definitely, I would never try and profit off of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to exploit it for the sake of fiction, but I did hold off on publishing it for a little while. But now it is out there. It's out there as a solo. And I'm hoping to raise some money. It's gotten quite a few sales so far. Okay. So
good.
That just went up this past weekend.
So now I'm curious, did your, who's this published by again? You have a publisher.
Oh, I'm self-published. I'm a self-published author.
Okay. So there wasn't a publisher or an agent that called you up and said, hey, this is a bad idea. So this is all on your own, which is good.
Right.
Yeah. So, Yeah.
I imagine a publisher would have pulled it too that weekend though.
I bet so. But were you tempted just to take it out of the book entirely and release it on its own like that? Or... was there a decision?
No, I wasn't tempted to take it out of the book entirely because it was so core to the fears as a parent theme, because I feel like in this time period that we're living in the United States of America, every time we drop our child off at school, are worried, you know, and that's not okay.
Nope. But yeah, I gave birth to my first child in 99 July of 99. So, but the thing was, Columbine was that year and I was pregnant, and that's just been my fear ever since Columbine, because I've got this kid now and it's like, geez. And they went to college. I worry about my husband where he teaches at a college university here. And I worry about my kids. Oh, it's disgusting. But yeah.
Well, and the access to weapons is just.
Okay. Yeah. You just have to kind of hold your breath and breathe. And in the end, I just feel so helpless as a parent, because
it is absolutely helpless feeling. A lot of people say don't put politics in your writing.
I don't know that that's political as much as that's a legitimate parenting fear.
Right. That's how I feel about it too. Politics are not things on a ballot. You know, it's not about just like, these are the fears we live with. these are the realities that we live with. And, you know, in the LGBTQ stuff, this a story that I wrote that's coming out in an anthology next year. It's called Insurrection. And it's about a lesbian couple. Well, one of them is bisexual and one of them is lesbian. And it's a dystopia where the far right has taken over in the US. And so they are gathering people up and putting them in camps and executing them. And it's not as though that hasn't happened.
Right.
So that's not political.
It's a legitimate fear. And you know what? In the end, everything can be political. Anything can be political. And I don't know that politics are necessarily bad. I think politicians, but you know, I think it's how we approach it, not the subject matter itself. You know what I mean? If you're going to approach, if you're going to come to me and get upset with me because you think me being bisexual is a political statement, that's on you guys. You know, that's not on me. I'm just living my life. I am what I am. I'm just sitting here, you know? And
exactly. I just got up this morning.
I just woke up. But yeah, if you want to come to me and ask me legitimate questions, or you're generally curious, that's another issue. And I'll talk to it no matter what your I'll answer questions no matter what your politics are, or if you, what your beliefs are even. But you know, we just want things to be so clear cut. And when they're not clear cut, I think that's upsetting to us. And
yeah.
Enter the bisexuals. Oh boy, aren't we fun.
I think you're right. I think the divisions that we have right now, which are so troubling, go kind of down to that, where we haven't been able to see, like, we've got enemies.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need to have enemies of people who, like, if we knew them, we wouldn't consider them bad people. So I think that black and white thinking of, if somebody disagrees with me, then they're a bad person, is just everywhere.
Eat Thanksgiving anymore? Nobody can eat Thanksgiving anymore. Like, look, just look at the food. Just don't look at the food, you know?
Yeah.
And nobody has rational okay, holiday meals. You're not going to have a rational conversation with somebody anyway, because a lot of stress up in there. And there's a lot of alcohol. Sweet potatoes. Yeah.
I just put my blinders on and talk about the sweet potatoes.
Yep.
And I've had a few confrontations with, because my daughter is LGBTQ, mm-hmm. who knows? She's 13, so you know, she's not settled into her identity. But there's some anti-LGBTQ sentiment in some members of the family, and that had to be addressed.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely the battles that will be picked.
But yeah, because I mean, you do have to defend your kids.
Right. My daughter, she did it herself with her grandparents, and I wasn't there. And we just kind of talked about beforehand.
When they do it themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It made it easier for me, because I honestly told her I wasn't going to do it for her. Because I felt like they have a good enough relationship outside of that I felt like I knew what the reaction would be. Like, their politics aside, their politics are terrible, but they are loving grandparents.
Yeah.
And so they're going to feel differently about it when it's someone in their family versus some celebrity some horrible person in some awful magazine they're reading. So
where can people buy your work?
Amazon.com. My work is all available on Amazon. Okay. It's quite a bit of it is on Kindle Unlimited.
Okay.
So you can download it for free and read
if
it.
If you've got Kindle Unlimited. If
you've got Kindle Unlimited. Yep. And all of it is super. The book is $2.99.
Yeah.
And the stories are 99 cents, most of them. So I've priced it really. So anybody can read it. And just if you read, review. I'm always looking for those reviews. So I'd love to hear what people think and just share their thoughts with other readers as well. So,
good.
Yep, Amazon.com.
Cool. Anywhere else at all?
I also have some... I have one story right now, and there will be more stories on godless.com, which is an indie horror platform.
Okay.
That you can buy stories and books from. And then I have a story that is going to be in Dark Town, which is an anthology that'll be coming out from D&T Publishing.
Okay.
I don't have a publication date on that. We just signed our contracts as far as getting that out, but it's a collection of revenge stories. And it is a charity anthology. The money's going to the families of the victims of the Uvalde shooting. Okay. So, yeah, just found out about that. And then there's it's a working title, I believe. But the Big Gay Book of Horror. I've got a story coming out and that'll be coming out next year. So.
Oh, that sounds fun. I like that. Big Gay Book of Horror. Do you have any events? Like, do you do readings or anything online or offline or?
Not right now. Not right now. I haven't done anything. I don't have anything planned in the near future, but yeah. I'm working full time and exhausted all the time, but right. I'll have some time off.
I would say that's 40, but that's actually being a parent. You're just.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sleep is for people.
I mean, working full time is. Working full time is a bitch. So
yeah.
I hate it. It takes a lot of effort to be somewhere other than your home that many hours a week.
It does. And I mean that's your second home. That's a lot of time. And then if you're gonna you're already gonna be worn out, and then I don't want to be emotionally scarred and worn out. I'm too old for that.
So I just focus all my downtime that I can is focused on writing and producing more. And then doing some marketing and sharing my work. But that's my capacity right now.
Sweet. Yep. Understandable. Anything else you want to put out there before we sign off?
No, I feel like we've gone over everything. I do want to say to people who are interested in horror and you know, have thought about writing horror, that it is just so much fun. It is just a really great genre to write and just activity to do because you can just be completely over the top. You can write anything that you want. And so, you know, and the people are very welcoming. So if you're a possible writer, I would say give it a shot. Try some writing.
Do you have what's your favorite, you mentioned groups of writing people, writing groups, horror writing groups that you belong to. Do you have one that you would recommend to people?
Get Writing Horror is a good writing for horror group. You can ask questions, you can post tips of your own. You don't do self-promotion on there. But there's a lot of connections there. You can find editors, you can find cover designers, and just connect with other authors. So Get Writing Horror is a great Facebook group.
Cool.
And then Books of Horror, if you're not on Books of Horror and you like horror, it's an amazing Facebook group. It's got 25,000 members. And it's just unbelievable. It's just constant. They're really big supporters of indie horror and then all the horror that's coming out. They know what's new. They know what's good. So Books of Horror is a great group to belong to, even if you're not a writer and you're just a horror reader.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, this was fun. Ruth Anna Evans, No One Can Help You, Tales of Lost Children and Other Nightmares. And you can find it on Amazon. And what's that other website you mentioned?
Godless.com.
Godless.com. You can find her writing there too. I'm Elizabeth Meacham. Remember, there's a whole Bi Plus universe ready to embrace you. Reach out and find your community.